April 8, 1927, how all the figures and symbols of the Old Testament symbolized the children of the divine will. How Adam, from a high point, fell to the lowest point. I was following the acts that the divine will had done in all creation, and I was also searching for the acts it had done in the first father Adam, as well as all those it had done in all the saints of the Old Testament, especially those in which the supreme volition had made its power, its strength, its vivifying virtue, stand out. And my sweet Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, "My daughter, the greatest figures of the Old Testament, while being images that veiled the future Messiah, enclosed also the gifts, the image, and symbolized all the gifts that the children of the supreme fiat would possess. When he was created, Adam was the true and perfect image of the children of my kingdom. Abraham was symbol of the privileges and the heroism of the children of my will. And calling Abraham to a promised land flowing with milk and honey, making him the owner of that land, a land so fecund as to be enviable and aspired to by all other nations, everything was symbol of what I would do with the children of my will. Jacob was another symbol of them. In fact, as the 12 tribes of Israel would descend from him, from their midst the future Redeemer was to be born, who was to bind again the kingdom of the divine fiat to my children. Joseph was symbol of the dominion that the children of my will would have. And just as he did not let many peoples and also his ungrateful brothers perish of starvation, so will the children of the divine fiat have dominion and be the ones who will not let the peoples perish that will ask for the bread of my will from them. Moses was the image of the power. Samson, symbol of the strength of the children of my will. David symbolized the reigning of them. All the prophets symbolized the grace, the communications, the intimacies with God that, more than they did, the children of my divine fiat would possess. See, all these were but symbols, images of them. What will happen when the lives of these symbols will come out? After all these came the celestial lady, the sovereign empress, the immaculate, the spotless my mother. She was not symbol or image, but the reality, the true life, the first privileged daughter of my will. And in the Queen of Heaven I looked at the generation of the children of my kingdom. She was the first incomparable creature, who possessed, intact, the life of the supreme volition, and therefore she deserved to conceive the eternal word, and to mature within her maternal heart the generation of the children of the eternal fiat. Then came my very life, in which the kingdom was established that these fortunate children were to possess. From all this you can comprehend how the primary purpose of everything that God did from the beginning of the creation of the world, and that He does and will do, is to form the kingdom of His will in the midst of creatures. These are all our aims, this is our will. And to these children will all our goods, our prerogatives, our likeness, be given. And if I call you to follow all the acts that my will has done, both in the creation of the universe and in the generation of the creatures, not excluding either those that it did in my celestial mother, or those that it did in my very life, it is to centralize all of its acts in you, to give them to you as gift, so as to be able to release from you, altogether, the goods that a divine will can possess, in order to form the kingdom of the eternal fiat with Ikaram, honor and glory. Therefore, be attentive in following my will. I was thinking to myself, how is it that, by withdrawing from the divine will, from such height Adam fell so low? And Jesus, moving in my interior, told me, "My daughter, in the natural order, one who falls from a very high point either perishes completely or remains so wrecked and deformed that it is impossible for him to recover his original state of health, of beauty, of stature. He will remain as a poor cripple, blind, bent over and lame. And if he is a father, from him will come the generation of the cripple, of the blind, of the hunchback, and of the lame." In the same way, in the supernatural order, Adam fell from an extremely high point. He had been placed by his Creator at a point so high as to surpass the height of the heavens, of the stars, of the sun. By living in my will, He dwelled above everything and God himself. Do you see, then, from what point Adam fell? Given the height from which he fell, it was a miracle that he did not perish completely. But even though he did not perish, the blow he received with the fall was so violent that it was inevitable for him to remain crippled, wrecked, and deformed of his rare beauty. He remained shattered in all his goods, numb in operating, dazed in his intellect. A continuous fever debilitated him, such that, as it weakened all his virtues, he no longer felt the strength to dominate himself. The most beautiful character of man, the dominion of himself, had vanished, while passions took over, to tyrannize him, and to render him restless and melancholic. And since he was father and head of the generations, from him came the family of the cripple. They think that not doing my will is something trivial, but instead, it is the total ruin of the creature. And as many more acts of her own will as she does, so many times does she increase her evils, her ruin, and she digs for herself the most profound abyss in which to fall. Then, I was thinking to myself, if by withdrawing from the divine will only once, Adam fell so low and turned his fortune into misery, his happiness into bitternesses, what will happen with us, who withdraw from this adorable will times upon times? But while I was thinking of this, my beloved and only good, added, my daughter, Adam fell so low, because he withdrew from an expressed will of his Creator, that enclosed the test in order to prove his faithfulness toward he who had given him life and all the goods he possessed. More so, since after the so many goods he had given to him for free, God asked of him to deprive himself of one fruit alone of the many fruits he had given him, for love of he who had given him everything. And in this little sacrifice that God wanted from him, he had let him know that it was for nothing else but to be sure of his love and of his faithfulness. Adam should have felt honored that his Creator wanted to be sure of the love of his creature. His fault was greater because the one who attracted him and convinced him to fall was not a being superior to him, but a vile serpent, his major enemy. His fall brought graver consequences, because he was the head of all generations. Therefore, as though naturally, all the members were to feel the effects of the evil of their head. See, then, when my will is expressed, wanted and commanded, the sin is graver and the consequences are irreparable. And only my divine will itself can make up for such great evil, as it happened with Adam. On the other hand, when it is not expressed, even though the creature has the duty to pray to me in order to know my will in her operating, if there is some good in her act, it is my pure glory, while if my will is not expressed, the evil is not so grave, and it is easier to find a remedy. And I do this with each creature, in order to test their faithfulness, and also to secure the love that they say they have for me. Who would not want to be sure about a property he has acquired, to the point that they write the deed? Who would not want to be sure about the faithfulness of a friend, or about the true loyalty of a servant? So, in order to be sure, I let them know that I want some little sacrifices that will bring all goods and sanctity to them, and they will fulfill the purpose for which they were created. But if they are reluctant, everything will be upset in them, and all evils will swoop down upon them. Therefore, not doing my will is always an evil more or less grave, depending on the knowledge of it that one possesses.